Welcome to the weekend edition of the Daily Stoic. Each weekday, we bring you a meditation inspired by the ancient Stoics, something to help you live up to those four Stoic virtues of courage, justice, temperance, and wisdom. And then here on the weekend, we take a deeper dive into those same topics. We interview Stoic philosophers. We explore at length how these Stoic ideas can be applied to our actual lives and the challenging issues of our time. Here on the weekend, when you have a little bit more space, when things have slowed down, be sure to take some time to think, to go for a walk, to sit with your journal, and most importantly, to prepare for what the week ahead may bring. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. It's always sensitive talking about these things, but Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to doctor-trusted ED treatments such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor's visits. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/TDS. That's hims.com/TDS for your personalized ED treatment options. Hard mints are a chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with your healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. Hey, it's Ryan Holiday. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Stoic Podcast. Today's guest is someone who, we'll call them a late bloomer, but their long germination is to the benefit of all of humanity. I'm talking about Dr. Edith Eger, the author of this wonderful book, The Choice, Embrace the Possible. She was born in 1927 to Hungarian Jewish parents. And if you understand your history, it won't surprise you to hear that she survives the Holocaust and then flees Hungarian communism after she survives, ends up in El Paso, Texas, is a mother, and it's only at age 50 that she goes back to school to become a clinical psychologist. She's introduced to the work of Dr. Viktor Frankl, who we talk about here a lot on the podcast, Man's Search for Meaning, Yes to Life, one of the founders of logotherapy. But Dr. Eger's book is incredibly moving, incredibly inspiring. What she's saying, her choice is actually at the root of Stoicism as well. She talks about Epictetus in today's interview. Epictetus says, we don't control what happens, but we choose how we respond, right? Her book is all about how you respond to the trauma, to the pain, to the suffering, to the difficulty, as well as the good luck and the fortune and the joy that life provides you. You choose how you respond. Please read The Choice. I sell this in the Painted Porch because it's one of my all-time favorite books. Her new book, The Gift, I just ordered. I'm very excited about. Her TED Talk is also incredible. It was truly an honor to do this interview with Dr. Edith Eger. Please read this book. And I think it's extra urgent today, given the rise in anti-Semitism. That's why we have to care about people. That's why we have to stand up for people, even when we disagree with them, why we have to protect the vulnerable, why we can't allow violence and discrimination and hatred to run rampant, why we have to always love, always accept, always protect, always preserve. They've done studies recently on how many young people have even heard of the Holocaust, how many young people even know that it happened. One of the worst things that humans have ever done to each other, perhaps the worst thing that humans have ever done to each other, and it's already slipping from our collective memory because we don't want to think about it. We don't want it to be true. We want to talk about what's pleasant. We want to talk about what's current. And what we risk, tragically, is repeating history. And this is a thing that, as she closed our interview with, something like the Holocaust can never be allowed to happen again. And as Marcus Aurelius says, we commit injustice when we allow injustice to happen, right? You can commit injustice, he says, by doing nothing. I firmly believe that. And that's why we have to choose, as the book says, we have to choose to be good, choose to be great, choose to follow that Stoic virtue. And this interview should hopefully help give you some clarity there. So here's my interview with Dr. Edith Eger. I have so much stuff I wanted to ask you. One of my favorite parts in The Choice, you talk about your son who was born with some disabilities, but you have this conversation with you and the doctor where he tells you that your son is going to be whatever you make him into being, and that if you push him too hard, it's a problem, but if you don't push him enough, it's a problem.
Oh, I'm so brilliantly. Oh, you are so brilliant. I love you. I love you. You're adopted.
So I'm curious then, given what you experienced, how did that shape your parenting strategies? I imagine you would have two impulses. One, you would want to hold them close and never let them feel even the slightest bit of pain. And on the other, it might make you, I don't want to say insensitive, but it could be hard to calibrate what's normal and healthy, given, you know, what you witnessed and what you experienced. How did you think about that?
Well, all I can tell you that this is a country of second opinion. And I was told in Texas that my son may never make it to high school, and I better look for a school for retarded. We don't use that word anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's when I asked, where do I get a second opinion? So I arrived in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins, and a Dr. Clark, beautiful neurologist, told me, give me your son for a week. And that's what I did, and came back a week later. And he sat me down and he said, your son is not retarded. He's got the bedroom eyes. He's got clumsiness and everything that comes with it. But he's going to be what you make of him. And that's when I began to shake. Me? And he says he's going to need speech therapy, occupational therapy, this, and the other. And how do I pay you? He says, give me $10. This is in 1916. I dropped out of school, and my son John graduated as a top student, top 10 student, not 10%, top 10 student from the University of Texas. If you go to the University of Texas, my name, John Eger, is there. He is my hero. He was born in 1956. He also picked up an illness called sarcoidosis when he was with his father revisiting Czechoslovakia. And
that's where my grandfather's from.
Really?
Yes.
From Košice, Kasha.
I don't know exactly. He wasn't Jewish, but he ended up in a displaced persons camp all the same, and he immigrated here and met my grandmother.
You come from good blood. Good survivor.
So.
Do you eat the food called trapanka, called halushki?
I remember eating a lot of sausage. We ate a lot of sausage.
A lot of sausage, exactly. Yeah, Hungarians have very good sausage too. And are you the firstborn child?
I'm the oldest, yes. I have one younger sister.
Children are Nobel Prize winners, very responsible. And if you marry a firstborn, you're going to have two bosses and you may have some power struggle.
I married a youngest child, so we balance each other out.
That's right. That you did well.
Well,
you know how we call the youngest child?
What?
Charming manipulators.
That's exactly, I would say with all kindness, that is a great description of my wife.
So never argue with her.
Yes. So I had an interesting question. So I'm fascinated. So you were born in 1927. Have you thought about who the oldest person you met as a child was? So like, I'm fascinated with how far back in history your life connects with. Does that make sense?
Yes, and the person is the wife of President Roosevelt.
Eleanor Roosevelt. You met Eleanor Roosevelt?
Eleanor Roosevelt, just a little bit. But anything I wanted to learn, I wanted to learn about the woman who created her own identity and not to bother being jealous of wife or anything like that. She sure. became my hero. She still is.
So she was born in 1884. So that's incredible. So, and she obviously met Theodore Roosevelt. And so I'm just fascinated with the way that lives touch other lives and how history is a thread of people shaking hands with each other from different periods, different experiences.
Beautiful, beautiful. I also know Tova, who did Eleanor Roosevelt on Broadway, and she did a beautiful job. Beautiful, a one-woman show many, many years ago, and now she's doing Dr. Ruth, and she's up there now with Dr. Ruth in New York, and some people call me the mix between Dr. Ruth and Joan Rivers, because I tell people to grow up. Go grow up, you know. I want to tell them, you want to be a baby or a big girl? Because when you're a baby, you sit in the back of the car and you mess around and someone is driving the car. You want freedom, no responsibility. But now, do you want to be driven or do you want to be the driver?
So let me ask, was part of what inspired you about Eleanor Roosevelt was that she, like you, was what we would call a late bloomer? You know, she really didn't hit her stride as an activist. Yes, she was FDR's wife, but I would almost argue that her impact as a public figure began after his polio diagnosis. Which I don't know how old she was, but I'd argue probably around 50 years old.
Yeah, I am a late bloomer too. When I was 40, my supervisor asked me to go get a doctorate, and I told him it's impossible. By the time I get it, I'm going to be 50. And he said, you'll be 50 anyway. So I tell women now, maybe you want to go to law school because mothers make very good lawyers, very good judges. And go back to school. Yes.
Well, you're certainly the oldest person that I've had the privilege of talking to Zoom on. So this is quite a treat for me.
I am older, but not old.
Could you have imagined as a young girl that this technology would exist? I mean, isn't this incredible?
Never, ever imagined that I would ever be in 93 as young as I am today. It's all about your attitude, honey. It's all about numbers will happen anyway. Manders, you know, the chronological numbers doesn't bother me at all. I'll be 94 in September, and I feel very, very much alive, and I hope to be alive for a while and writing another book with my daughter and on recipes, and hopefully that's going to be also a recipe for school children so they would really take education seriously.
Seneca famously said that far too many old people have nothing to show for their years, but their age. I think what's incredible about you is not that you're 93, but that at 93, you have experienced what you've experienced. Your life has had many seasons of experiences.
very much of a Renaissance woman, and I think women can do that, and the later in life, the better, because they can really pick and choose the attitude that you are going to work with, whether they're going to stop doing one thing or give up one thing. But when you give up anything, you have to replace it with something else. So you have to really check out your priorities in life and think about your thinking, because what you think, you create.
That idea of thinking about your thinking, that's sort of the core of Stoic philosophy, which I talk about. It's also the core of Buddhism, but it also strikes me that what you talk about in the choice is really thinking about what you're thinking, that even something as terrible as Auschwitz, you have the ability to determine what you think about it. You might be powerless in that you're there, but you can decide what it means to you.
It is very important for me to tell you that I found love and God in Auschwitz, because I was able to look at the guards, that they were more in prison than I was, that they were brainwashed. They were brainwashed to look at me and calling me. They're calling me cancer to society. And I was told in Auschwitz, I'm never going to get out of here alive. And I was able to turn hate to pity and feeling sorry for the guards, that they would have a conscience and they would have to pay for what they're doing now, putting children into the oven without even gassing them.
But that doesn't come naturally, right? You have to really work to get yourself there, or is that how your disposition just is?
I think I wanted to live so badly. And I was in love. I was in love, you see. And he told me I have beautiful eyes and I have beautiful hands. So, you know, in the cattle car, my mom told me, and I quote that all the time when I go to school. My mom told me, we don't know where we're going. We don't know what's going to happen. Just remember, no one can take away from you what you put here in your own mind. So that's why I tell young children to please stay in school, even though, you know, God gave us temptation. You know, I'm really tempted to eat up the whole Hungarian chocolate cake, but I have to learn to be a good mommy to me, because dependency breeds depression. There was no mommy there for me. I had to learn, is what my belief master told me, that look at God from inside out. And I learned to change my thinking and never even imagine that I am not going to get out of here. When I get out of here, I'm going to see my boyfriend. When I get out of here, I'll show him my eyes, my hands. You know, when I get out of here, tomorrow is where I was always. Tomorrow was really, truly a wonderful friend to me.
Got a quick message from one of our sponsors here, and then we'll get right back to the show. Stay tuned. I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorne sponsored today's episode. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. Thorne.fit bit.ly/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500.
Are you familiar with James Stockdale, the prisoner of war in Vietnam?
Maybe not.
Yeah, he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam, and he studied Stoicism, and so he was thinking of the work of Epictetus there, and as he was being tortured. And I'd be curious what your take on this is, because what he was saying, and obviously not having experienced it, I have no idea, but he was saying that there's this tension because he said the optimists were the ones that didn't make it out, because the optimist always thought, I'm going to be home by Christmas. I'm going to be home by summer. And it never happened. So he said, you can't be an optimist. You have to be a realist. But at the same time, you have to have this unflinching belief that you are going to survive. And if you do, you will turn this into the best thing that ever happened to you.
See, I had two Vietnam veterans. It's in my TED Talk.
Yeah.
So one of them was in a kind of a fetal position. Why me? Why me? Cursing God, country, you name it. And then the other one, it was just the most amazing, complete antithesis of this one, and told me, hey, Doc, I'm sitting in a wheelchair and I can see my children's eyes much closer. And I can also see the flowers. And I'm sitting there with a white coat, a lab coat, Dr. Eager, Department of Psychiatry. And I feel like the biggest
imposter.
Because I went to school. And made me realize that I cannot take them further than I have gone myself. And that's when I decided to go back to Auschwitz. I wish I could meet those two Vietnam veterans that I decided to go back to the lions, then look at the lion in the face. And I went to my sister and I asked her to come with me. And she told me I'm an idiot. And not only an idiot, but also I am a masochist. That what do I want to do when I'm already in America and I can be a good Yankee Doodle Dandy? And believe me, that's the work I do today, because you can't heal what you don't feel. So don't medicate grief. And I'm so privileged to teach at the university the wonderful psychiatric people who are not medicating grief. But I also can tell you that I also worked with a wonderful girl from Yugoslavia, and together we were keeping each other alive. But she told me that we're going to be liberated by Christmas. And Christmas came. And she died the next day. That kind of rigid thinking, all or nothing, didn't work at all. But I knew who was going to die. I had this ability to look at the eyes, to look at the face of people who just gradually gave up. Or they even touched the barbed wire and they got electrocuted. Or they touched the guard and they were shot. You know, they took my blood. And one time they asked me about getting my arm so they can take my blood. And I asked, why are you taking my blood? And he said, to aid the German soldiers. I spoke German fluently. And to aid the Germans so we can win the war and take over the world, especially America. So I couldn't yank my arm away. But you know what I said to myself? You are the stupidest, because I was a ballerina. And I, you know, and so I never allowed them to get to me. And people say, you make me angry. Nobody makes me angry. People have as much anger or whatever, any feelings. I do not allow people to ever murder my spirit.
My wife says that. She says, I've said, you're frustrating me. And she said, I can't make you frustrated. That's all on you.
Yeah, I have an anxiety. And no, you don't. You're thinking anxiously. And yet, yes, Epictetus was certainly right. That is not what's happening. It's what you do with it.
Yeah, Marcus Aurelius in Meditations, he writes, today I escaped anxiety. And he says, no, I discarded it because it was inside me. I let it go. And I think that's a beautiful way to say it.
That's what I say, that revenge gives you very temporary satisfaction. But forgiveness is the freedom, is the gift that I choose to give to myself. And I think that is a big, big difference, that I am not a victim. I was not at all ever adhered to be a victim. I was victimized. It's not who I am. It's not my identity. It's what was done to me. And I think there is a big difference. I refuse to be a victim. It's not who I am. It's not my identity.
Well, let me ask you about the forgiveness thing, because this is something I'm struggling with. Obviously, it's not at the scale of what happened in the middle of the 20th century. But I was talking to a friend about this. It's been hard for me, you know, in America, COVID-19, this horrendous pandemic. And one sense, it was unpreventable. And then another sense, the immense proportion of the tragedy was preventable. Because human beings, people we all know, you know, decline to take it seriously, decline to think about their obligations to each other. I'm having a little bit of trouble going back to life and being able to forget, you know, that certain people couldn't wear a mask, or certain people didn't want to follow protocols, or certain people said, you know, I'm young, this doesn't affect me. This is, you know, it's only old people that are dying. How do you forgive and forget the immense callousness and selfishness that human beings are capable of?
No, I never forget what happened. But I'd like you to maybe pick up a book, that you may have it in your place, by Max Weber. Capitalism and the Protestant Ethics.
Okay.
And he refers to the Jewish people as pariah. Jews are the pariah. See, what happened, Germany didn't win the war. And any time a country suffers economically, they have to have a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
Carter, you know, let's go kill Carter. That's what happened, you know, in Iran. But I think it's very, very important to know that while you blame, you're still a child. Children blame. You made me angry. You did this to me. No, 4 o'clock in the morning in Auschwitz, I didn't know what's going to happen next. I didn't know whether I'm going to end up in a gas chamber. I didn't know. And that's a very difficult place to be, that you don't know what's going to happen next. We didn't know when we took a shower whether gas or water is going to come out. Minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day. But I knew that I'm going to do everything possible to take care of my sister. And all we had was each other then. So you had to go beyond the me, and commit ourselves to each other and form a family of inmates. All we had was each other then, and all we have is each other now.
So when you come out of Auschwitz and you go back to your life, and then your life is disrupted again by the sort of tyranny of communism, I'm just curious, how do you not carry resentment or anger, not just at the perpetrators, but at the bystanders or the indifferent population that allowed something like this to happen? That's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah, I think, you know, there is no forgiveness without rage. You got to go through the valley of the shadow of death, but don't get stuck in there. Some people are chronically angry because the anger somehow keeps them from really facing and go through that pain, but not to get stuck in there, not to be a victim. So you're in a dark tunnel, but you're going towards the light, that you have to have an arrow that you follow. No, don't cover garlic with chocolate. It doesn't taste good. You know, don't try to forget things as I did. I went totally underground when I came to America because I didn't want to be a weirdo. I felt like a weirdo anyway. So if you asked me, who are you? And I would say, who do you want to be? I think I became a very successful schizophrenic.
And you tell a story about meeting one of the guards right afterwards and the feeling of love that you experienced when you held their hands. That struck me as almost superhuman.
That was actually Cory Ten Boom, who met the guy who was responsible for her sister's death. And that's where I learned about forgiveness from Cory Ten Boom. She's my hero. The Hiding Place, you may have her book there. And I think that it's very, very important not to run from the past or forget it or fight it, but recognize no matter what happened, I made it. I was very suicidal after I was liberated. I was lying in a cast. I could hardly breathe. And I realized the parents are not coming back. My boyfriend was killed a day before liberation. It's important to be realistic rather than idealistic, because when the idealist doesn't get what they're looking for, they can become very sarcastic, very cynical. The Hungarians can be very cynical, very sarcastic. I like philosophical humor, not sarcasm or cynicism.
Yeah, General Mattis says that cynicism is cowardice, which I think is a beautiful way of expressing it. It's a mechanism to hide from life.
Yeah, that's well said. Very well said. So you read a lot of books, the books that you carry.
Yes.
That's beautiful. That's lovely. That's lovely. You really are maybe wondering, well, what is my truth?
Well, my grandmother gave me a copy of Viktor Frankl's A Man's Search for Meaning as a young man. And that book opened my eyes, as it did for you, And I'm just curious about what your experiences with him were like.
My experience with him was wonderful. When I met him, he told me to meet him in San Diego at the International University. And this was the time when I was studying myself, philosophies. And then my daughter was with me. And as he spoke with the philosophers, I said to my daughter, it's funny, he's not mentioning Kierkegaard. Not that I gave a damn about Kierkegaard, but you know what happened afterwards? I thought I had a pope with me, but the pope was insecure. He wanted to know whether he made any mistake. And I said, no, it was lovely. And my daughter said, remember, Mom, you said that I wanted to kill my daughter. I want to kick her under that German mentality that you have to do everything right.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, I didn't give a damn about Kierkegaard. Here I am with the Pope, little me, Viktor Frankl. So that's my first experience. And he actually, I am in one or two books too, that I became truly a very, very ambitious logotherapist. I am a diplomat in logotherapy. And I did a keynote address on his 90th birthday. And I can tell you that Viktor Frankl has a great deal to do with where I am today, with me and my voice, that he guided me to go back to that lion's den and look at the lion in the face and reclaim my innocence. So when I went back and I was ready to come out, I saw a man with a uniform. And for a moment, I thought, I'm in a camp with a Nazi. And the realization that I had a blue American passport in my pocket, that was an amazing experience, that I'm not Popeye. I am me, and it's okay to speak English with an accent, and I don't have to give up my true self for some kind of a formula. That actually was the best thing I ever done. And that's what I do in my work now. You revisit the places where you've been. We go through the grieving, feeling, and healing. You cannot heal what you don't feel.
Got a quick message from one of our sponsors here, and then we'll get right back to the show. Stay tuned. There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80. The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. How does that work? Because today it seems like there's a lot of focus on, you know, trigger warnings and safe spaces and trying to protect people from pain. I'm not discounting their trauma, but it seems to be that our response is, if you have trauma, there's something wrong with you, and now we have to be very sensitive or you will break. That seems the opposite of what you and Dr. Frankel were talking about.
So I think that I will tell you, the more you suffer, the stronger you become, because it's much easier to die than to live. And I was very suicidal after I was liberated. Not while I was there, but when I realized my parents are not coming back, the reality hit me. And I knew that some voice was talking to me and told me that if I die, I will never find out what happens. And it's better to be for something than against something. And that's how I joined the healing arts profession. Healing is different from curing. So the doctors and I work together and they do the curing and realize that some people need medication because they have something too much of or too little of. And it's very important to have a very good physical, to have a good testing of everything from top to toe, because talking therapy is not enough many times.
I think that the thing that struck me most about Man's Search for Meaning was he has this paragraph in the book where he says, you know, we ask, what is the meaning of life? And he says, well, that's wrong. Life is asking us what meaning we are going to create with our actions.
Yes. And not only that, but I think that it's not that you can buy, it's a discovery. And I like to call Auschwitz as an opportunity to discover the part in you that no Nazi could touch, my spirit. They could throw me in a gas chamber any minute. I had no control over the external, but they could never touch the spirit that I bring you. That somehow I found hope in hopelessness, and there is a gift in the COVID. Don't go back. Have a new beginning.
People say they want things to go back to normal, and normal is what caused this. It shouldn't go back to normal. That would be a rejection of the meaning of the suffering that all these people experienced, ourselves included.
No normal. No, there is no such thing. Don't go back. Have a new beginning. And especially if you are in a marriage, you may be able to tell your husband that you would like to go back to school. You know, because when I told my husband I want to go back to school and get a doctorate, he said, I don't want to be introduced as Mr. and Doctor. You see, but you know, I didn't listen to my husband. You got to risk. you're going to risk, and it's okay. It's okay because I'm not a people pleaser anymore. There is something in me, and that's what happened, you know, when we fled to Vienna and we were going to join the train to go to Israel, where we put everything there, clothes for my daughter for 5 years and everything. And I had a friend in Israel who told me not to come to Israel now because they are in a desert. And if I had the opportunity to go to America, and that's what I told my husband. And he went out to the train station. They called his name and he came back. And that's how I came to America in 1949 and let everything go. And we came totally penniless. I came to America. I didn't have $6 to get off the boat, and that the Red Cross gave me $6. And you can go to the William Beaumont Army Medical Center and see how much money I gave, not money, but the time I gave for the $6 that they gave me when I came to America. So I don't owe anything to anyone. I always pay my bills right away. And I think it's very, very important to discover the real you.
And I think when you're discovering the real you, one of the things that was most moving to me in the book was, I believe you met like a white supremacist or a racist or something, and you were talking about trying to find your shared humanity with that person and discovering that you yourself, a victim of so much hatred and discrimination, that you had to find the bigot inside you, because we all have one.
That's beautiful. You know, I had this 14-year-old, and he told me in Texas he's a boot boy. And I know nothing about boots, of course. And I just acknowledged it. But then he got up and he took his elbow and he said, "Hey, Doc, it's time for America to be white again. And I'm going to kill all the Jews and all the N-word and all the chinkos," you know, in a Texas accent. Sure. All the chinkos and all the Mexicans. All the Mexicans. Okay. So if I would have reacted, see, when you react, you don't think. If I would have reacted, I would have taken that boy, I would have dragged him to the corner, I would have told him, "How dare you talk to me like that?" Because my mother went to the gas chamber, but I did go to God and I asked, "What do I do?" And God told me, "Find the bigot in you." And I said, "That's impossible, Doc. I came to America penniless. I went to the bathroom. One of them said, 'Colored.' I joined the NAACP. I marched with Martin Luther King, and God said, 'Find the bigot in you.'" And I created the atmosphere that I do today to people that they can feel any feelings without the fear of being judged. And I said, "Tell me more." He never knew who I was. He never knew a thing about my history. But you see, I did the mommy thing, but I'm pretty old-fashioned. That the mom cannot make a boy into a man. It takes a man. So I referred him to a man with gray hair, someone who's been around. And so that's my experience with the white supremacy boy. And this is, unfortunately, that happened January 9th in America.
January 6th,
I'm sorry.
Right.
And when I saw someone wearing a shirt, 6 million was not enough. How did you feel? How do you think I felt after Nazi Germany and Communist Russia? that history has a tendency to repeat itself.
Does it concern you? You know, there's that expression, when the wolves of hate are loose, no one is safe. Does it concern you that that kind of rhetoric and violence and distrust and misinformation and dehumanization, does it concern you that that is spreading again? I mean, in America of all places?
Do you have the book by Adorno, The Authoritarian Personality?
No.
And he created the California F scale. F stands for fascist. And he tells you that small town USA is ready for fascism. It comes from Harvard.
Yeah.
That people don't question authority. And that's the worst thing you can have is ignorance. And then you blindly adhere to authority. You have to question authority and assign the shame and guilt to the perpetrator. And that's what I did when I went back to Auschwitz.
And you also have to understand that we are all here in this together, that we're all human beings. The Stoics talk about this idea of sympatheia, that we're all part of this large, you know, sort of cosmic whole. They say what's bad for the bee, or what's bad for the hive is bad for the bee. And I think we're losing our sense of collective humanity. And that's what puts us in danger of committing in terrible injustices against other human beings.
You know, it's wonderful what you're saying, to be for something rather than against. And I think that is so important, because we've never been as divided as we are now. And I know that you are the ambassador. I'm going to call you the ambassador. Look at all the books behind you, and you're letting people know that the Nazis burned the books.
Sure. And what's that quote, where they burn books, eventually they will burn people?
Well, the people were objects. You see, killing the Jews was the goal, and have a world without the Jews. But that little Jew, let that little Jew, Albert Einstein, came to America and changed the history of World War II.
Yes, the irony of the defeat of the Nazi war machine and the Japanese war machine is that it was driven in many ways by the talent and brilliance of the people that they exiled, primarily to England and America. And I think we are in danger of losing sight of that with today, with our fear and rejection of immigrants, with our demonization of poor people. This is where ideas come from. This is the lifeblood of America, and it always has been.
You know, Churchill is my hero. We're going to fight. Yes, Churchill is my hero. Wonderful man. But I was in London. Thank God I was interviewed by the CBS and many people. BBC. It was so wonderful for me to say that I love Churchill and I loved Eisenhower. And I was in Auschwitz when they planned the Normandy invasion. Without the Normandy invasion, I wouldn't be here with you, a mother of three, a grandmother of five, and seven great-grandson. And one of them are just 1-year-old twin.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Isn't that?
It is.
So that's why I am never going to retire, and I'm going to do everything in my power to let you know that you are the ambassador, and keep on reading the books and selling the books and having people like me once a week or once every, whenever you can, so people can really exchange philosophies.
Well, I'm truly honored, and this is a rare treat for me. I think something I've been thinking about, you know, people are so ambitious, right? They want to be famous, they want to be rich, they want to be powerful. But really, the as successful as your books are, nothing will match the multi-generational impact that you just talked about, that you had children who had grandchildren and that is the impact that we have. That's the message that we leave to the future is the children we have and how we raise those children and what values we give them.
And you know what? My books are on the living room table of my great-grandsons.
Wow.
So please keep having the books out and let people know that the books were unfortunately gotten rid of during the Nazis. And you're here to let them know what happens when good people do very, very bad things. And Auschwitz was something that is not comparable to anything, because never in the history of mankind such a scientific and systematic annihilation of people existed. I watched the other day the Nuremberg trial. Oh, it was so brilliantly done.
It's incredible to think how little these things can start, right? And I think that is the other message from the Second World War, that this horrible tragedy, although it has sort of systemic, roots, that it's really springs from the almost the single-handed hatred and insanity of a single individual, that one person can put all of those events in motion. And I heard a great quip at the beginning of the pandemic, before we were quite sure of the origins. They said, if you don't believe an individual can change the world, talk to the person who ate a bat, right? When we thought that a bat had spread coronavirus to all these people. You know, Hitler is proof that a horrible individual can change humanity for the worse. But Churchill and de Gaulle are proof that an individual can redeem history, can change history for the better. And I think that's the choice, right? Are you going to be a hero or a villain? And that's the one thing that we decide. No one gets to choose that for us. We decide.
I was told that there was a Jewish guy in Czechoslovakia, and he didn't have any money to go to Vienna to take a test to become an artist and go to school. So he walked to Vienna and he begged them to take the test, and they allowed him. And next to him was Hitler. He had a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitler flunked and he made it. And he had tremendous guilt that if he would have flunked, then we wouldn't have the Hitler who became a Hitler. And he had tremendous guilt, survivor's guilt, that Hitler really wanted to be an artist. He was a beaten child. And if you want to read any books, you read Swiss psychiatrist Alice Miller. And she is amazing. And the book, especially For Your Own Good, has to do with Hitler having a terrible childhood, beaten by his father, and that had a great deal to do, that he was never a loved child. And, there is a difference between what kind of life you lead. See, I am very interested in having faith, which is very different from belief.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what you believe. I want to know what kind of life you lead. because words can be very cheap commodities.
My friend Stephen Pressfield, he's a great writer, and he jokes that it was easier for Hitler to start World War II than to pursue his dreams as an artist. And I think that that's true. You know, we can be so afraid of what our calling is. We can be afraid to be vulnerable and real. And Hitler chose hatred and destruction and pain and nihilism.
Blame.
Yes, and blame.
While you blame, you're still a child.
And he was an infant. I mean, when you watch some of his tantrums, or you see some of the things that he would say to his, yes, right. He's a small child who's in charge of an enormous army. And we see how destructive that turned out to be.
And that's what happened when a country suffers economically. That's what happened with the Ayatollah. Let's go kill Carter and so on. I think it's very, very important that you are an ambassador.
Well, thank you. This is a complete honor and a treat, and I am glad that you are here to still talk to us. This is an incredible journey that you've been on, and I respect all your contributions and your message. It made a huge difference in my life, and I know it's made a huge difference in the lives of so many people. So it must have been a very dark time there in Auschwitz, but the light for all of us is that you persevered, because now we get to bask in that light.
So don't call me shrink, call me stretch. And today I help people to stretch your comfort zone.
Because in your heart, make your heart bigger.
Yes.
You help people stretch to make their hearts bigger.
That's it. And I have my cherished wound, and you have your cherished wound. And don't try to run from the past. Face it, recognizing that life is difficult. Life is not easy. You can make it easier, but it's not easy. So if you don't change, you don't grow. There is a Latin saying, I studied Latin, tempora mutantur, times are changing, et nos mutamur in illis. Times are changing and we are changing with the times. Don't go back. Use this time out to regroup, to redecide that there is no going back, there is a new beginning. When people asked me, did you love your husband? And I told them I was very, very lonely. I was very skinny. And most of all, I was very hungry. And someone gave me Hungarian salami, and that's how I got married. But then they say, but you went back to him. I said, no. When I went again, I was a woman to a parent. And then we got married and we flip-flopped. I was a parent, I was a child. But my husband had nothing to do with the divorce. It was me, hungry, wanting to have more dates because I never had a date in my life. He had nothing to do with it. So I hope today is people's time out to really take inventory, because many times people in midlife say, I have a midlife crisis. No, you don't. There is no crisis. There is a transition.
It's a new beginning. It's a fresh start.
It's a fresh start, and there is no problem. There is a challenge. So you have a challenge and a transition, not a crisis.
I have tattooed on my arm, the obstacle is the way.
Show me again.
The obstacle is the way.
It's the way, and it's going to be your way. You're unique. You're one of a kind. Yeah, Diamond.
This was my first book about philosophy, The Obstacle is the Way.
Oh, thank you. How many books did you read?
Right.
I've written 11 books.
Oh, my God. So You're going to have a dozen books.
I'm trying to get to a dozen. Yes. My next book is about courage. I'm doing a series of books on the cardinal virtues, courage, justice, temperance, and wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope I'll be alive to read it. And I couldn't be more satisfied today that I met someone who is doing everything in his power to see to it that Holocaust will never, ever happen again. And I want to thank you for your commitment and remembering Epictetus that it's not what happens, it's what we do with it.
Thank you for listening to the Daily Stoic Podcast. I just wanted to say we so appreciate it. We love serving you. It's amazing to us that over 30 million people have downloaded these episodes in the couple years we've been doing it. It's an honor. Please spread the word, tell people about it. And this isn't to sell anything. I just wanted to say thank you. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.